Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm just going to pop out for a few seconds, and Suzanne Posel is going to take the helm. So, Guy Fawkes, Suzanne, do you know who Guy Fawkes was? Would you be able to give us a wee explanation while I go check something?
Okay. Guy Fawkes was a gentleman who was hired by some Jesuit priests to blow up the Parliament with King Henry... King James, I'm sorry, the same King James that commissioned the King James Bible. So he took a bunch of gunpowder and was caught before he actually ignited it. And therefore we have, in celebration of a hired Jesuit henchman, Guy Fawkes Day. And that's...
Now, what's happening today with Guy Fawkes is a pop culture reference, because we've all seen the movie V for Vendetta. I don't mind saying I thought it was a fantastic and a terrifically awesome film that kind of meant and said a lot. But now it's become the pop culture reference of I don't like the establishment and I don't want them to know that I don't like them, so I'm going to wear a mask and disguise my identity. Now, I recall we talked last time about what was it we were talking about? Crowd psychology.
Yes, yeah, I wrote a huge article about that.
So basically, the baseline of crowd psychology is if you're anonymous, then you lose your sense of self-control, you're much more easily manipulated, and you'll do things that you wouldn't ordinarily do because you've got the anonymity of the crowd. Instead of a crowd, there is a mask, so you don't even need a crowd. This is crowd psychology of one.
Yes, yes, because the identity of the person is masked by the crowd, so the mask could serve psychologically as the crowd itself, and then the person would feel free to behave in ways that they might not normally do if their identity were forefront.
You know what I've seen people on a V for Vendetta mask saying? I am a social worker, and I have worked with people that this government has absolutely let down and purposely destroyed their lives.
Yes. You know? Yes.
That's the kind of freedom being used for a good thing, you know, if it's the truth or whatever. It does pose a certain moral question, don't you think, when you're not accountable to your identity, are you really brave enough to stand up? But that said, some people prefer to linger in the background. They don't want to, you know, get all the attention and what have you, whereas some people are far more likely to get into that attention-seeking sort of career path. Like myself, for example.
Well, I've looked into Anonymous, and yes, some parts of Anonymous were hijacked by the FBI and CIA and used in for nefarious purposes. But just like any large group, I don't believe that every member of Anonymous works for the government. It, you know, they're everywhere and anywhere, so it couldn't possibly be.
And they could be anyone.
It could be, and not every Tea Partier was hijacked by the Koch brothers. You know, not every Tea Partier believes in everything that the hijacked version of the Tea Party stands for.
You know
people have to differentiate.
This is also another interesting thing. What happens when something you believe to be your favorite cause, or somebody you believe to be your hero? What if you found out that it was co-opted?
Well,
right, now, what happens is people you build a trust. Relationship with a radio host. Okay, you tune into them every day. You hang on every word. You frustratingly hold your breath through the ad breaks. And at the end of the day, you think that you know something about this person that you're watching or listening to every day, but you've never hung out with them. You've never given them a hug. You've never bought them a drink. Do you really know them? That's the thing. There is a whole other world on the other side of this microphone. 99% of it the audience would never find out about. Because it's a need-to-know basis. But there's some people in this movement. And it might even be a hefty chunk of them from a number of different spectrums. Some people don't want your freedom to be restored, but they just say that they do, so that you'll trust them and give them your support, just like any corrupt politician.
Yeah, I have a term for that. I call it branded loyalty. Once that person has the audience's, you know, branded loyalty, they believe that person regardless of what they say. They excuse any behavior, even if they don't agree with it. They make concessions for it simply because they believe in that person and their personal identity is attached to that person. So if that person falls, then the individual falls, and the individual listener or the individual audience member is not going to let their personal identity be affected by the thing that's happening to the person that they look up to.
It's about putting people on a pedestal. When you put somebody up on a pedestal, depending on how high you've put them, when they fall off that pedestal, when you find out different, you're the person that gets crushed as they come tumbling down, not them. They shrug it off like it's nothing and go on to scam somebody else. But you kind of lose your belief in the movement at all, because one douchebag gave you a bad experience and he was lying to you, and it's really unfortunate that you got sucked in. But there's a lot of people who say that's irredeemable. You can't so knowingly trust somebody and then be redeemed for it. I disagree. I think as soon as you realize you're being lied to and then start switching on to the truth, you're redeemed. Doesn't matter how badly you were lied to, how much of your life you spent listening or paying attention to somebody who was giving you a whole boatload of BS. You know, you live, you learn. Don't you? The fight goes on. Like like when you swear to the Constitution in the military, you defend it from the enemies, foreign and domestic. They specify and domestic, because you're just as likely to be stabbed from behind from somebody who you thought who was on your side.
Well, absolutely. We have in our culture branded loyalty. We believe in the Constitution. We believe in our country. We believe in the people that run the country. When we find out that those people are not doing what we think that they're doing, we become disenfranchised. Where do we turn? We thought we were Americans. We thought we were a constitutional republic. We thought we were this and that. Now we're not, or whatever that means doesn't mean the same thing anymore. It's an identity crisis.
And sometimes when you get disenfranchised, it's like, I was just thinking about like a pun with the disenfranchised, and is that kind of like when you're running a franchise like McDonald's and then you find out something really bad about McDonald's and so you foolishly buy another franchise for Burger King?
Well, no, disenfranchisement is that sense of crisis, that what you believed in to be true is not anymore.
Hey, I have one of those a day.
A lot of people do. It just depends on what kind of day you're having, I guess.
I turn a business into this. What if I turned being disenfranchised into a franchise?
Well, a lot of people have. You have a lot of antisocial movements that have turned that absolutely into a profit. Look at the goth culture, and now the emo culture, and any of the different sects of cultures that spin off from the original. They all come with their own set of music and movies, things you can buy, clothing you can wear, jewelry, makeup, hair care products. It's all set for you.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? It's like a series of slides. I mean, think about this. You know, you ever been to one of those big water parks and you get right up to the top of the tower and there's actually quite a couple of different slides that you can choose once you're up there? And what's funny is you could conceivably, if you really wanted to get to the bottom and not use one of the slides, climb over the railing and dangle precariously as you climb slowly but surely down the side of the water slide structure. Or you could take one of these nine different water slides for your personality and your lifestyle and your language and education level, and wind up at the very end of that slide in a meat grinder every single time. It's not the easy way out that you should be looking for. It's actually the hard way out. Whatever's the hardest to do, that's probably the thing that you should be trying to do, because that's the only thing that's really worth doing, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. We live in a world of convenience, so we think everything is easy. It's easy to find a partner because you just have a couple dates and that's the person. You easily fall in love. You easily get a job. You know, just get a college degree and you'll be assured a job. Look, you've got this piece of paper. You know, but life really doesn't work that way. And so we become disenfranchised.
Well, there's a whole lot of these dis words. Disillusionment. And in fact, I recall a friend of mine told me, Suzanne, he made a anti-John Key, anti-National, anti-Labour, anti-New World Order post. And one of his friend's arguments against him was, you're just disillusioned. Hold on a second, mate. Are you telling me that the problem with my argument is that I'm not operating under an illusion? Like you? An illusion of freedom? That I actually recognize I'm a slave and you're a slave. In fact, we all are. We're just cattle, livestock on a global plantation full of scum and filth and pedophiles and Satanists. And the problem with my reality is I'm not operating under the illusion that everything's all sunshine and rainbows 24/7, mate. I operate under the reality that there's some real dark scumbaggery in this world. And the problem with scumbaggery is that it replicates itself. Always winds up infecting and taking over everything. Growing inexorably until it kills the host. Kind of like a cancer. I also operate under the reality that cancer cures exist, both literally and figuratively. And this is the problem with society, don't you think, Suzanne? Everybody is not looking for the cure. They're just looking for the little treatment.
No, because that's how we're trained.
Yeah. I remember back in the day in the 60s and 70s in New Zealand, if you were sick or something, they'd give you a spoonful of kerosene. You know that?
Oh, my God.
There's some hardy folk in this freaking country, yo.
Oh, that's worse than the, give the kids some brandy. They'll sleep well.
Yeah. Just a thimble.
Yeah. Kerosene.
Unbelievable. I read it in a Barry Crump novel. He's a classic New Zealand outdoorsman. We had a picturesque. He accidentally drowned like 6 kids in it one time. He was doing off road, and it had a whole bunch of kids in the back of the ute, and it upturned in a lake, and the kids died, and he kind of never recovered from that.
That is insane.
Now then you start talking again, putting people on a pedestal. You know, he was a hero to New Zealanders, and then all of a sudden the whole public gets crushed like that. You see, this is what happens. People have an investment in somebody other than themselves that embodies characteristics that you do not yet possess. You know.
Well, I've been looking into the French Revolution lately. I've been spending a lot of sleepless nights last couple nights, so I've been watching some documentaries on the French Revolution, and then I stumbled upon what happened 20 years later after the French Revolution was established and the Republic and their constitution was established, the Terror with Robespierre. And 55,000 French people died because they didn't believe in the Republic the way that the Republicans wanted them to believe in it. So they died. The guillotine was turned from the elite onto the people. By the people.
And for the people.
Yeah. This man rose to power. He was integral in having the French Revolution become a success the way that it was. And so he became part of the Ministry of Public Safety. And they signed the
Let me just get this straight. The guy responsible for cutting off the heads of a good portion of the population without so much as a trial, really, got made the Minister for Safety?
Oh, no, he was the Minister of Public Safety. And under his rule, he signed the first police state in. He signed a document in that resembles the NDAA, no right to trial, under suspicion. You could be executed under suspicion. You would definitely be jailed forever under suspicion. And they decided that anyone who, once they established the Republic, anyone who was not for the Republic was an enemy of the state, and they killed them.
hardcore, man.
Yeah.
Hey, I guess they knew... Wait. This was before the American Revolution, wasn't it?
The rise of Robespierre began 20 years after the French Revolution was established, and the French Revolution happened a few years after the American Revolution.
So America revolted before France did, right? Didn't France support the colony becoming free?
Yes, they did. And the people who started the revolution in France blamed the aristocracy for spending all the money in the coffers of the government or the monarchy on the American Revolution, and then, you know, making the French government completely destitute.
Hey, Suzanne, apparently you need to turn down a little gain on your mic a little. If you think about revolutions, I can't see a whole lot of really good examples in places, but there are a few good examples of revolutions that actually, you know, kind of worked, rather than just having some kind of scumbaggery turn up. Right. Anyway, I wonder...
I can't think of one.
Yeah, well, what about, Hugo Chavez? He wound up educating people with the Charter of Freedom and so on and so forth, or whatever it was. And then even when the CIA came and staged a coup, there were like 2 million people on the streets, and they got him back in, you know. So I think that kind of worked, because they managed to relieve a lot of the poverty and education problems. Not sure about human rights abuses or anything else going on in Venezuela at the time. I mean, like that, but for all intents and purposes, it's not that bad. And then, of course, there's Gandhi. Got the Indians off of the salt tax. Managed to get the British Empire to leave. That was an interesting peaceful resolution, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Here's two. All right, here we are. We're coming back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It is November. Oh, hold on a second. Let me just see if I can do this right.
Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about Vendetta Guy Fawkes, who's incidentally the last man to enter Parliament with honourable intentions. As my sister says anyway, think about this. We're in the middle of a powder keg, regardless of the date on the calendar, aren't we? We're on the brink of World War, the economy's in the toilet, the food's all poison and toxic and running out, the seas are irradiated or contaminated with corrects at 9500, you got chemtrails all over the land, aluminium contamination of the ground and water supply. We're pretty well fracking screwed. Okay? Like, this is just kind of dawning on me. As it does. This is not a good situation we're in here. Everything, everywhere, is totally fracked. Including, of course, the large quantity of fracking going on all around the world. Including in New Zealand and the UK. And the USA and Canada and Australia. Australia's been kind of copping the worst of it. Jeepers creepers. You should see what's happening to all the lakes and rivers everywhere, everyone. You know? Holy crap! I remember talking to the people, they used to see the rivers back in the 50s and 60s. You could see the bottom. You could see the bottom of these big city rivers. Now you can't see nothing. Nothing but 2 inches in front of your frickin' face. Everything's all coated with pollution. Crap everywhere. Dust and trash. homeless people in the streets, veterans. What the heck? How can people sit back and believe in the subjugations of any other person when if you just look, just frickin' look around at what is going on? You wouldn't believe a single thing that the politicians or any person that is quoted as being an expert has ever freaking said. They don't have any idea how bad things are because they're the ones who've made it this way and we don't hold them to account, do we? We just want to sit back, we want to relax, we want to take some time out because the days are long, the days are hard, it's a struggle to survive. And it's exactly the way they want us, struggling for survival, so that there is no middle class anymore. There is no people with enough time and money on their hands to actually organize and protest and get rid of the scumbaggery that enslaves them. There was an awful lot of big, massive social change 50 years ago or something like that. And now all the social changes are being dictated by Hollywood, Madison Avenue, movies, TV, the whole lot of it, designed specifically. Even your education, even the food you eat, everything's been branded, packaged, barcoded, tracked, traced, poisoned, destroyed, unnatural life. That's what we're living now. A completely unnatural life. And it's making everybody really ill and gosh dang crazy. Isn't it driving you nuts? Don't you feel it? That you're just getting sick all the time? And you're getting really, really effed off at things so easily? Something's coming. It's a powder keg waiting to explode, to bathe the whole world in flames and darkness. Just think about it for a moment. That is the reality that we live in. And now, you got to understand that despite the fact that all of that's going on, you're still here, you're still alive, you're still breathing, which means you can still laugh, you can still smile, you can still love. And while you can still do all those things, nothing is over yet. Nothing is over yet. And over till it's over, the fat lady sings, stuff is bad, sure, but it ain't over. Don't give up. Just stay alive in your head and in your heart. All right. I think I'm done ranting.
I'm sorry, I'm ranting. I said I'll get back to our guest. Susanna Bowles will tell you.
It was a good rant.
I thought so too. I gave myself chills.
Frustrating, and after a while, you know, you have to do something to lighten up, because otherwise, you're right, you'll go freaking nuts. You'll just be like this guy sitting on his porch in his rocker ranting. Nobody wants to talk to him.
Hey, at least he's getting some sun. Most people would be inside on their rocking chair ranting.
Well, that's true. Yeah, no, they're on social media in the comment threads.
Yeah. Well, isn't it funny that there are actually people on comment threads that are the equivalent of a crazy ranting homeless person on the side of the road that you walk by because what they're saying is unintelligible?
It is funny, but since they have a profile on a social media site, they have legitimacy. So it's not crazy ranting, it's dissemination of information. It's redefined.
It's because nobody knows how to discern fact from fiction anymore. It's been bred and educated out of the human condition.
Well, yeah. I mean, think about, like, everyone who looks into certain people in alternative media, find out some pretty insane things, but yet they say things like, well, that person woke me up. So you find out that they're compromised, but they woke you up. That means that everything that they told you could be compromised. So what did you wake up to? It's just logic.
Well, that's a good question. But the thing is, people have forgotten that you're supposed to put grammar before logic. Okay, you got to know the who, the what, the where, the when, and the why, and the how, right? Or something like that. Before you then start using logic, well, actually, if this happened, then that would happen, blah, 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 blah. Once, because if you've got all of that information, it reduces speculation down to a singularity. Then you can use logic and just go, boom, that's precisely what it is. And most people, instead, they use logic first. And they say, oh, the government would never do that. I mean, why? Why? It's just illogical to kill everybody that they're milking of money and so on and so forth. I mean, obviously they need us. Blah, blah, blah. No, they don't freaking need you, bro. You obviously haven't heard about the advances in robotics. They barely need any of us. You know, maybe half a billion. Tops. Frack the rest of it. You know, 9 out of 10. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, maybe some of the people listening to this are like driving around in an iPod or radio or something like that, and they're looking out over the traffic, you know, and it's seething and it's just terrible. And just imagine for a moment, 9 out of 10 of the people around you aren't there anymore.
Most people can't fathom that. They can't. They can't even.
You're looking at virtually empty streets, yo. All right, they're just not there anymore. You know, think about that. Because I don't care what people's argument is to not get involved in the movement. That's my argument to get involved in the movement. Not to see everybody get freaking ruthlessly and inexorably exterminated, you know. Perhaps my motivations are somewhat, I don't know, silly. Maybe trying to... Hold on a second. This brings me to another important thing that I was thinking about. People who say that it's a good thing that we're about to all die. What the hell is up with that? Are they suicidal? Or are they so programmed with some BS human guilt complex? Oh, we're responsible for the destruction of the rainforest and the contamination of the oceans. Well, yes, we are responsible, but not you specifically. You didn't dump all of that stuff, did you? And if you wanted to do something about it, you could. So stop blaming the entire human race for the problems caused by a few scumbaggery elite people. It's freaking stupid. It's throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's throwing the whole world out with the scumbaggery. It's a stupid mentality. I don't mind saying it. Because it inherently gives you over to not caring about other people. What do you think the problem with the world is, mate? It's that people don't freaking care about each other anymore. They're all plugged into their frickin' iPhones. They don't even notice your frickin' existence. Put down the damn thing. Make eye contact once in a while. Sweet mother of mercy. We're capable of travelling the stars and both inner and outer. And we're stuck on frickin' Facebook 90% of the time.
Yeah. Isn't that insane? The world around us, we don't participate in the actual reality with our neighbors and our friends, or even when we go out in public. We don't look at people in the eye when we're on the street. We don't say hello. Maybe somebody will hold the door open for you, but if you don't get there within like 30 seconds, then, you know, the door shuts in your face. There's pleasantries, hello, how are you, but nobody really cares how you are. And yes, we sit and we chat we text message and we chat online all night, like we're socializing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just taken the effort out of it. And the fact of the matter is, chatting with somebody online is nowhere near as good or as intense or as engrossing as being with them in person. You know, it's just not possible, is it? And as a result, we miss out on very important human interaction. And I think it dehumanizes us to a certain extent. And in a way, by keeping us literally out of physical contact with humanity, you lose your humanity entirely. It makes you much easier to control if you don't really care, if you think everything's virtual, if you don't realize that when you cut somebody, they bleed, and it's not just some video or Hollywood frickin' splash blood of slasher movie. Mm-mm-mm.
Well, isn't that funny that we watch these horror movies and then we're not even remotely affected when we see pictures of the devastated buildings and babies in the rubble and fathers holding their dead infants, regardless of what continent they're on, regardless of what culture they happen to have been born into, that's not a factor. You see a father holding his dead baby from a building that was blown up by a drone, and you have no feeling toward that. And I wonder if, you know, I grew up in the 80s, Freddy Krueger and Jason, those were the big movies. I couldn't watch them because I can't stand that, but they made like 1,000 of each of them when I was growing up, and everybody watched them, and it was no big deal.
Well, you get desensitized after a time, don't you? It seems, I recall reading some of the reviews of the original Alien when it first came out in theaters, and the chest burster scene. And apparently, and this is back in 1979, people were so shocked from seeing that alien burst out of his chest that they vomited in the aisles, fainted, ran screaming from the movie theater. Like, it was a huge, massive shock to the system. You play that stuff today and it's like almost quaint, you know? They've got things grosser than that on frickin' Fear Factor and primetime TV that kids are watching now.
Yeah.
They got strippers on TV all day and all night on the music channels. It's freaking unbelievable how saturated, how culture has become with scumbaggery and debauchery that is winding up, playing itself through our progeny. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
Fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us? Lead to the collapse of us.
Welcome back.
Lead to the collapse of us.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. At least I hope we're live. Yeah, been some downright scary problems going down at the network down there in good old boy Texas. It's not good. It's not old. And, oh boy. My very special guest is Suzanne Poser. Welcome back.
Thank you.
We touched on quite a few subjects on that first long segment. And now, what is happening around the world? Let's talk World War III. So we've got the Syria situation, which allegedly also involves a seven-plus billion, 100 billion gas deposit under Israel that they want to get through Syria, and they can't do that while Syria is free and independent. And let's think about that powder keg there. What's happening down in Europe? I don't understand the geopolitical situation right now, because after Obama backed down from military intervention into Syria earlier on this year, I was kind of like, I was pretty sure that we were kind of prepared for war there at that point. So what stopped them? Do you have any ideas, Susan?
Well, they said that Syria had chemical weapons. It's the same sarin gas that has been making its way throughout the Middle East. It started with Rumsfeld selling it to Saddam Hussein, you know, to when he was fighting with the I can't remember. Sorry, guys.
He was fighting with Iran.
Not so good. Yes.
He was fighting with Iran.
Yes.
Was it with the Shah?
We installed the Shah.
Yeah.
I think it might have been when we were trying to take the Shah out.
Yeah.
But anyway, the World Health Organization has announced that after 14 years of no polio, all of a sudden polio shows up. So we're not going to bomb them, but polio shows up. And so the World Health Organization wants to do this massive vaccination campaign, vaccinating every child in Syria with polio, essentially, because according to the CDC, the way that you contract polio is through the virus. Through the vaccination.
All right. Okay.
Sorry.
So, everybody, in order to protect you all from polio, we're going to give it to you. I love vaccination, you know. It's so logical and reasonable sounding.
Yes. If they can't bomb them, they're just going to throw out a bioweapon and kill them anyway. But they've got the pipeline. See, Syria, Iraq, and Iran want to get together and build this natural gas pipeline. And the Israeli government have discovered that they have an exorbitant amount of natural gas, and they want to build a pipeline with a bunch of other people. You can't have two pipelines in the Middle East, so someone's got to go.
Hey, this town ain't big enough for the both of us.
Exactly, that's what it is.
As Big Bill Rockefeller would say.
And this also affects the global economy, too. Because the United Nations said last year that the whole world needs to move to natural gas. And we've been fracking and selling it. And we're the third largest exporter of natural gas, the United States is. And if the global reserve currency right now is hooked up with the petrodollar, which, you know, the U.S. dollar is hooked up with OPEC, and we've actually been under sanctions. The U.S. has been under sanctions with OPEC since the 1970s. And so if we're dependent on petrol, then we are subject to the Middle East. But if we are dependent on natural gas, then we are not subject to the Middle East. So you have this movement toward natural gas, away from petrol, the restructuring of the global reserve currency, and you have countries fighting each other to maintain control over energy resources.
Well, if you have geopolitical control of the region, you have control of the world to a large extent, provided everybody is on oil. The problem is, of course, this drive towards natural gas is prompting other countries to imbibe in rather copious quantities of hydraulic fracturing, otherwise known as fracking, which contaminates the water table. And, of course, once the water table is contaminated, you can't live in that area. You just can't. Water is life. And what's strange, though, is the alternative to getting oil, which is a really abundant resource and regrows itself, according to Lindsay Williams, who's on the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline or something like that back in the 70s when they discovered Gull Island. So instead of harnessing an infinite resource using appropriate technology like the Pogue carburetor, for example, that was able to get 200 miles a gallon, with 99% less emissions, because 99% of your emissions are actually just unburned hydrocarbons. And if you vaporize them in the engine, you don't have that problem. Way more surface area. Now think about this. You'd have to use bugger all oil. Oil prices would be like nothing if you're getting 200 miles a gallon. That's 20 times what you're getting now. Virch. Something like that. It's ridiculous. See, we're all slaves to these BS oil barons who conceal all the technology, and then they prop up proxy wars if you don't like their oil cartel. You know, you have a look at Saddam Hussein. Oh, I'm going to sell oil for euros. Boom! You frat, back in the back of the head. And then Gaddafi. Hey, we're going to sell oil for gold. Boom! Over in the back of the head.
And yeah, and Assad, same deal. Same exact story, different players. We've seen this many times before.
As they say in the ghetto, the players may change, but the game, it stays the same.
Yes, absolutely. So are we using petrol? Are we using natural gas? The fact of the matter is we have technology where we don't need to use metered energy. And it doesn't make any money for anyone, so nobody's going to manufacture it and make it available for the general public.
I do believe that this would be a great way of freeing the human race. If you're free to travel in any direction for 1,000 miles for $50, can you imagine? Just imagine what a massive boost that would do to the economy, especially if there's no air pollution to deal with at the same time. I mean, come on. People are talking about, oh, it'll shut down this, that, or the other. Yeah, but people will have all this free energy to start all new, amazing businesses that use 1,000 times the energy that they were using and not even have to pay for it.
Right, they use the fear that, oh my God, your life is going to change. It's not going to be the way it is now. You won't have all the conveniences. If we switch over, we have to stay the way that we are. Otherwise, you know, God only knows how much it's going to cost or what we're going to have to go through, or will this technology fail? We know that this technology that we're using right now, we know that it works. Let's just stick with it.
Yeah. Excuse me, what we've got ain't working, all right? The system in its entirety, all the technology, entertainment and politics and spirituality and everything that you could possibly conceive of that governs a society is fracked. Absolutely fracked. There's no escaping it. Therefore, anybody who sticks up for the system must be clinically insane. and sure enough, they actually are. Have you noticed this, Suzanne?
I have, but, you know, it's funny that they use the same argument for us. You know, Al Gore was just on Jimmy Kimmel saying climate deniers are insane. They have a psychiatric disorder. They're nuts. Carrie Norgaard, last year, out of the Oregon State University, was saying that they need to be under psychiatric care if you deny climate change.
Yeah, well, I think they're right, actually. If you deny that the climate changes, you are clinically insane. However, however, to deny that you want to be taxed on the very breath that you exhale is not insane at all. To want to tax that, on the other hand, that's freaking nuts. And sure enough, all of these people, all of these climate cultists, as I call them, are completely and utterly insane. Total eugenics. Seriously. These people are like, well, I'm never going to have children because it's bad for the environment. And I'm going to make sure that nobody else, I'm going to encourage everybody else to not have children as well. You're promoting the frickin' extinction of the human race. We've already got like a birth rate of like 1.6. And you need 2.4 in order to actually sustain a society so that it doesn't go extinct a la dinosaur style, buried in the Badlands in a contorted position, you retard. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, the fossilized version of talk radio. And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously Fukushima irradiated island chained paradise in the sunny slave South Pacific, where everybody has a part time job as an eco light bulb. And my very special guest is the wonderful and is it effervescent? Because I've heard people say ever effluent, and I thought that ever effluent just meant unlimited poo.
I don't know.
I could be wrong. I don't know. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. When things come to a head, what's it called? That Kundalini awakening, I think it is. You have this real eye-opening experience, and you have an entire reversal, a enormous shift or change in your current life. Now, a lot of people are talking about these arbitrary shifts, like, for example, today or yesterday, it might have been, Comet Allen or Eisen or something of that nature. Stu Webb saying it's going to, like, impact on, like, November the 15th. And, like, if it impacts in water, that's going to wipe out most of the coastal cities. Or if it hits near land, it'll wipe out, like, 3 states in the US or something like that. You know, this sort of thing. And my friend John Eisen from uncensored.co.nz has been talking about this as well. You know, I just don't believe in being afraid of the end of the world at all, or even really even preparing for it. I don't know why. Maybe I'm a fly by the seat of my pants kind of guy. Figure I can talk myself in or out of any situation. In most cases, it seems to be the problem. Because I just think about this, like, where were you on December 21st, 2012? I was at home with a couple of the mates around, watching the movie 2012 that I have on DVD, you know?
That's a good one.
just for a laugh.
I really thought for a long time that something big was going to happen. My husband and I both did, and we were looking at each other like, oh, my God. And as it got closer and closer, we just realized that nothing was going to happen. And then nothing did, and it was kind of like Y2K. Like,
Everything's Y2K, global warming, global cooling, freaking la 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 la. Everything's designed to just mind control you, basically. If you think that something bad is coming, you have a different perspective on life, don't you? You think about it being finite, and so you stop thinking long term, and you start thinking selfishly.
Well, Okay, I don't mean to backtrack, but let's go back to the French Revolution and Robespierre. One of the things that they instilled was a sense of religious belief. They instilled a parade and a holiday for the supreme being. That's what they called it, the supreme being. And they wanted everyone to have a universal within the state ideology of whatever religion was, you know, that they were putting forth. Everyone had to believe in the supreme being, using religion to kind of keep people in line, which is what religion has always been used for, to make sure that everybody stays the course and keeps it going, because the society needs to thrive and the government needs to continue.
Continuity of government. Now, I wonder, is there any point to it? Because as far as I see, the further government continues to grow and expand, the worse everybody's life becomes. However, I do believe in limited government. And this hamster wheel that we've all got ourselves on, just taxed on every single thing you could possibly conceive of. This, how many different types of tax are there in the US that you have to pay, Suzanne? Isn't like in the something thousands, like 6,000 different types of freaking tax people have to pay?
Oh, I'm sure. I have no idea, but I'm sure it wouldn't surprise me if it was that much.
Yeah,
I don't. And the question.
And I think
is,
that was probably pre-Obama. That was probably pre-Obama. Goodness knows, it could be like freaking 8,000-10,000 times you raise your tax. Oh my God, it's like having all. Just think about this. Think about the government as a mosquito, right? And think about a type of taxation as a type of mosquito. Imagine being bitten by 1,000 mosquitoes at the same time. They'd drain all the lifeblood out of you, you'd be dead, wouldn't you? And that's exactly what happens over your entire life. They come in, they suck the blood out of you, and then they go home and they lay their eggs.
That's definitely a picture in your mind for you. Jeez.
Maybe just vegetables form with them, you know.
Kind of like these little drones, these little fly drones and butterfly drones that they have, that they're just swarming around. Like in that movie Amityville Horror, when the room got infested by flies, and then the voices get out.
Yeah, kind of a little bit worse than that, but yeah.
That's all I remember.
You probably turned off the computer at that point.
I just blocked this stuff out. It's useless.
Well, it can be a harsh experience.
I've never been in a room where a disembodied voice told me to leave. So I don't know.
Well, obviously, you haven't been to a house party in New Zealand.
No. Oh, jeez.
No, wait, I'm just joking. No, a disembodied voice, maybe a disheveled voice at least, though. Speaking of horror, I wonder if it's okay to do this on the radio, but to actually just talk about some of these kind of really, really horrific things that the elite do, and the things that are the most painful to hear, and the ones that evoke the worst images that you could conceive. You know, think about that for a moment. What images get conjured up in your mind?
When they were putting their children out during, like, when Cyprus was, not Cyprus, Greece, and the whole thing started, and they started going under, and the pictures of people putting their children out to be sold. That really bothered me. you know, that you would get to that point, that you would think that somebody else would be better off with your children than you because you can't support them and you don't see a way to ever support them. Just broke my heart.
Yeah, that really sucks, man.
I don't know if that was horrible. Well, to me, that was horrifying because I have my two babies and I can't imagine life without them. So I can't imagine what a parent would have to go through to get to that point.
Yeah. And also people who aren't parents don't get that, I don't think. Because when you're not actually directly responsible for the life of another human being, you don't really know what love is.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's a huge problem with a lot of kids that are adopted. They don't, my husband was adopted, and so he went through that. He found his birth mother, and so that repaired that hole for him. But he spent a long time wondering, you know, who really loved him or who really cared about him if his own mother didn't. And a lot of my friends, and even myself, growing up in a broken home, you go through that too when your parents get divorced. They say, oh, it has nothing to do with you, but you never believe that. So you spend the whole life wondering what you did wrong and trying to fix the relationship with your parents, with other people. And, you know, like a couple of years ago, I sat down with both my parents and told them how I felt, and they told me how they felt, and it repaired the damage. But I don't know how many people actually do that.
Well, I think also in order to, let's say if you're watching a movie or whatever and there's a really sad scene, the reason why people find it really sad is because something like that might have happened to them. You know, there's something they can relate to. If you can't relate to that, you know, if you haven't really experienced a huge suffering, pain, loss, and what have you, I think it shuts out your empathy to a large degree because you just don't know what it feels like.
Sure, and we're supposed to innately have feelings toward other people that we don't feel at the moment ourselves. We're supposed to be able to imagine what it would feel like to be someone else and therefore feel sympathy toward them. And that's supposed to be an innate function of our personality, but it's been taught out of us. And I think it goes back to what we were saying before about watching violence and rape and abuse on television emulated in our lives, in our music, in our art. If it's inundated, it ends up desensitizing. Now, I'm not saying that violent art or violent music or violent movies shouldn't be made, but if that's all that we're consuming, it's going to have an effect on us. It's just obvious. If all you eat is peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, your body's going to break down eventually.
Yeah, well, I would say so. You need nutrients. When your body is creating and assembling these kind of chains of information to make amino acids, which your body basically lives off, it needs nutrients in order to fill in. It's the cement that holds the code together. And if you don't have any of those nutrients, you're fracked. Because you can't actually build anything that your body needs. Nothing to protect itself, nothing to regrow itself. You're basically, you're done and dusted. The problem is food. In the United States, it used to be measured, I think, in about the parts per million of nutritional bioavailable mineral quantity per million. And back in 1950 or something of that nature, it was around about 400 parts per million. And today it's around 40 to 50 to 60 parts per million. You've heard of the 5-plus-a-day campaign, you know, to eat 5 fruit and vegetables a day?
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, let's say that was done back in the 50s. That would mean today, in order to get the same nutritional quantity, you'd have to eat 50 a day.
That's the problem. With Codex Alimentarius, even, you know, the supplements, the food is destroyed with the GMO. So, yeah, you're eating 5 fruits a day, but you're eating GMO fruits, so scratch that. And with the supplements that we're taking, they're so watered down that they're ineffectual. And therefore, you'd have to eat a whole bottle and you'd get sick off the gelatin in, of the capsules. So we're not doing ourselves any good other than growing our own food and speaking to our local farmers and making sure that they're growing their food and they're taking care of their animals the way that they should so that they have healthy meat and healthy fruit and vegetables to sell to you. Other than that, you're screwed, basically.
Well, if I say that we're basically screwed because we don't have enough good food, there's things to do about that. I mean, we've got a garden out the back that Sarah's really been tending to quite well, and it's done in a very permaculture fashion. So it's only a very small garden, but out of that very small garden, you've got, you know, celery to pick off, lettuce, silver beet, chives, two different types of parsley, sage, oregano, that kind of thing, rosemary. So you're always picking off a herb or two here or there, and you never go hungry. And it's only a very small gun, and that we've once you've built up the soil after about a year or so, you've got yourself a veritable little food forest patch. It's not that hard to do. The problem is people don't have the willpower or the creativity in order to make it happen. The Japanese have figured out a really good way to grow their own food. Just cans, you know. You got those big cans of like Campbell soup or something like that. They've been painting the outside of them, filling them with soil, and then planting little herb plants in there that they can have there growing on the windowsill and pick them every so often for cooking. You know, you don't realize how much space you actually have for plants and food to grow, because growing food is like growing money. And money's tight right now, isn't it? So you better start growing a bit of food, shouldn't you?
And absolutely. Absolutely, you should. If you just have a windowsill, you know, clear off an area in your kitchen. If you don't have a back, if you have a back deck, you can grow an herb garden. You can grow some vegetables. Not all. Some of it gets heavy, and you don't want to, you know, drop your deck on your neighbor underneath. But we all should be supplementing with real food that we're growing, because even if it's just a little bit right now, it's like getting a taste for it, and it makes you feel good. And so you want to do more, and so you will. So then you'll go to a community garden in your area and rent a space for $40 or $50 for the season and grow more food. And it's contagious.
I also like the idea of sharing with your neighbors, you know. There's so many other different organizations out there. In New Zealand, we've got this thing called UBI, Out of Our Backyards. And they meet up all the time, swap around food, buy each other stuff, put up stalls together. It's a great way to kind of get food, like real food, involved within the community. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
I got some so-called friends, smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know.
Welcome back.
I'm flying a JFK.
You are listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. At least I hope that you're really, really listening, because we talk about some real important stuff on this freaking show, bro. I mean, seriously. Now think about it. Think about it. Really, really seriously. Look at the mainstream media. Think about what the alternative is. You definitely don't want to be watching the mainstream media, mate. Unless, of course, it's just to have a laugh. Like, for my money, Suzanne, I don't think it gets any funnier than seeing Barack Obama give speeches. Oh, my God.
Oh, you know what was funny to me was the day of the LAX shooting. That was huge. It was all over the news. Everyone was paying attention to it. No one was paying attention to the executive order that Obama signed that handed over the United States to the UN officially under Agenda 21. For the sake of climate change. Obama threatened back in February that he would issue an executive order if Congress didn't act, and so he issued an executive order that would give the government the response to prepare the nation for the impacts of climate change. This included periods of excessive high temperatures, heavy downpours. Heavy downpours? Seriously? Like it's raining a lot? And so we are subject to Agenda 21 and government control because it's raining a lot? Increased wildfires, severe drought, permafrost thawing, ocean acidification. Ocean acidification is the scheme where they're sequestering CO2 in the ocean that is destroying the plant life and the marine life that is sanctioned by the UN and used by various governments. That has nothing to do with us. That's them. And then rising sea levels.
Well, that's what happens when you do too much acidification.
Maybe that's Al Gore's problem. But yeah, everybody's paying attention to the shooting at LAX, and nobody is watching how this executive order expounds on a previous executive order that gives the government an action plan, a task force that works with all governmental agencies, local, state, and federal, engaging in strong partnerships and information sharing at all levels of the government, including state and local, risk information decision-making and tools to facilitate the action plan that the federal government is putting down, disseminating down throughout the governments, adapting, learning, and experience serving opportunities for people to come together and promote all of this climate change propaganda and preparedness planning.
It's a cult, basically. No different to the Aztecs, you know. Oh, I worship your son. I will bring you a drought unless you sacrifice a whole bunch of my political adversaries and give me their daughters to rape as well. You know, okay? Otherwise, there'll be like some bad weather, bro. Right? Trust me, right? All I'm asking for is all your gold and all your women. Trust me. The weather's going to turn bad unless you give me all your gold and all your women so I can appease the gods.
Yes, yeah, exactly. They knew that the solar eclipse was going to end, but at the same time they told everyone that it wasn't, and they needed to tear out the hearts of X amount of people, and blood needed to flow in the streets. So they killed a bunch of people, and then the solar eclipse or the lunar eclipse goes away, and everyone says, phew, thank God we killed all those people. Otherwise, God, what would have happened?
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do just knowing what happens in the natural world when other people have no freaking clue about it. You know, they'll think you're a magician. Like Tesla.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
In fact, somebody asked me once if I could speak to anybody living or dead, who would it be? Freaking Tesla, bro.
I'd like to speak to Jesus and get the record straight, yeah. Get the whole record straight, because everybody's got their version of what Jesus said. I'd like to know exactly what he said.
Yeah. Jamming with the J-Man.
Well, I would just like to know. You know, it's always in the back of everyone's head. That's why fear from a religion works so well. Who's right? Which religion is right? Nobody knows, because the people who know are dead and they're not talking.
And all the religious leaders claim that they are the harbingers of the one truth.
Exactly. So who, I mean, if there is a God, I don't want to piss God off. So which one is correct? Or are none of them correct?
Well, when two people say two contradictory things, it's because one of them's lying. And so now what we have is we have all the religions saying contradictory things. So to my mind, it probably means that all of them are lying.
Exactly. And think about how many civilizations have grown up dependent on this belief, and how many social ideology and the way in which we treat each other even today is based on all of these beliefs that may just be whatever somebody concocted, like Scientology. You know, you're not selling that many sci-fi books. Hey, I'll just write a religion and make a ton of money.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I just went to a funeral, and unbeknownst to me, the guy who I was going to the funeral for was like one of the founding members of the Scientology Church in New Zealand here.
Were you clear?
I suddenly realized that I was surrounded by Scientologists.
Did they audit you?
I don't know.
They, you know, they have like that process where you have to clear yourself of all of the evil demons or whatever that are inside of you.
Well, was L. Ron Hubbard a Freemason or something? I don't know.
Was he? I don't know. I'll look that up.
But one of the stories goes, and the general rules of thumbs is that if it's a branch off religion or something like that, it's probably some form of Freemasonry started by some kind of 33rd degree Freemason, you know, who really believed in it. But at the end of the day, it just wound up co-opting people in the name of the Supreme Council of the Order of the Silver Star, which is a.k.a. the Illuminati. So let's think about this. If you wanted to control the world, wouldn't you really, really want to make sure that you could take control of all the religions first? You know, so that all the people that are used to believing stuff that they can't see or measure or touch dance to your little tune, maybe dance a little different tune to everybody else around them, so that they're always constantly infighting and bickering amongst themselves and not realizing that you're the one that created both of those religions for them to bicker and argue amongst yourselves. So you never figure out that there's somebody with his hand up the backside of the person who's telling you what to believe.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's crazy talk. What are you talking about? That can't be true. Everybody is lying. Everything came from one source. No, that's crazy talk.
Yeah.
that's what Catholicism was. You know, that's what it was intended to be, the one world religion. It just didn't work out. You know, Martin Luther kind of screwed things up.
Yeah.
And then you had to have the Counter-Reformation, and you had to bring people back by any means necessary, which means you had to have the Inquisition and kill people in order to get them saved.
Yeah. Well, I do believe that there's something interesting going on planet Earth right now, kind of strangely, right? For example, last night, I was randomly... And this happens to me reasonably often. Thought about the name Mrs. Nesbitt. Mrs. Nesbitt. Where in the hell is this name Mrs. Nesbitt coming from?
That's from Toy Story.
Because I went to sleep, and I got up, and I went to my Facebook. And I went to the birthdays. It's kind of the first thing I do, like find out whose birthday it is today and then send them my happy birthday song to make them feel better about it, you know. And one of the names that came up was Mrs. Nesbitt.
That is strange.
It's happening to me a lot. Like it happened the day before that and the day before that. I'm really starting to kind of have all of these little strange coincidences, like things come popping into my mind and then showing up within quick succession, like something's happening to me.
I have some really weird things happen and always have in my life, and I just file it away as I don't know. You know, I've gone to people and asked them, you know, priests and pastors and rabbis and holy men of all different kinds and people in the New Age movement. It just doesn't seem to make complete sense. But there's definitely an element that we don't ever discuss that is the weirdness that goes on.
It's a synchronicity factor. And I think Ellen Aberdissa Green had a term for this. What was it? Synchromysticism. Basically, these kind of things that happen that are, you know, amazing coincidences happen for whatever reason. And at the end of the day, you have something to contribute, something random, something amazing, something completely unpredictable. And in that way, it makes life extraordinarily exciting, doesn't it? Because, I mean, it's, nothing's all planned out, and there's a whole bunch of strange, interesting ways and coincidences that can happen that can change your entire life experience. And what I'd love to be able to do, because I think that human beings are capable of this. I think Nancy Duterte, I think the skeptical psychic, wrote a great book about this, about how you can actually train yourself to start being able to use your psychic abilities. And I think that would be really, really cool, especially for like doing songs and radio and stuff. Just being able to kind of tap into things a little bit. You know how like the Jedis can see things before they happen, and that's why they appear to have such quick reflexes? Well, I want to be able to see things before they happen, and that's why I appear to have such quick wit.
Oh, I've had dreams that came true. When I was 12 years old, we had a hurricane coming, and I had a dream about it like 2 months before it even happened. And so the day that we were all packing our stuff, going to a friend's house to ride out the storm, I packed all of the stuff that I didn't want to get destroyed and put it in the back of the car. And my mom got mad at me. She says, but it's taking up room. We have all these other provisions we need to put in the car. And I said, well, but we're not coming back. And she laughed at me, and we never came back. The entire area was completely destroyed, leveled overnight. I don't know what that was. I don't know what I tapped into or what was going on there, but it's definitely filed into, you know, my life experience is weird.
Yeah. I remember one time I had this guy, Shane Wenzel, a.k.a. Tanai Rakau, is a psychopath, you know, uses people, makes up all this BS to cover his ass, and just basically is just a con man and a liar and a cheat and a fraud and a violent abuser. And me and my friend go in to record him just doing what he normally does, you know, threatening, intimidating, dodging questions and that kind of thing. He notices then we've got a camera on him, so he throws me out of the building, and I'm filming him through the window, and he starts roughing up my mane. And so we got him on camera yelling and screaming and grabbing him by the shirt collars and getting him in his face and everything like that. All these little bloody Black Power gang members are like standing around, kind of like little slave scum, you know, just terrible little onlookers to this kind of abuse and scumbaggery. And we exposed his ass, you know. And what happened was, about a day before that happened, I was coming down to my car, and something told me, Vinny, you need to get in the car as quickly as possible and get the engine turned on and get out. And I was like, okay. So very, very quickly got the key in the door. Open the door. I opened it so quickly that I actually grazed myself across the chest as I was opening it.
And then, wow!
And I got in, put the key in the car, turned it on, put it in reverse, closed the door, put the handbrake down, and I was boom, and I was moving. And then the very next night, that's when we went and exposed this guy. My mate was blocking them. I had a chance to make for the car, and my mate told him to go for the car. Just went for the car, got the key in the lock, opened the door, turned the key on, put it in drive, bopped down the thing, opened the door for my mate, got him in, and we were out of there. And we got all the footage and everything, and we exposed his freaking ass. So that any time any activist gets talked to by the sociopathic Mother Franca, we can send him this video of him trying to rough us up. And being the scumbag that he is, lying blatantly. You know?
when you put yourself in harm's way. That's the interesting thing, though. When you're in harm's way, something tries to tell you, shh, you're in harm's way. Pay attention. Listen. Make sure that you listen to those instincts. They'll get you out of those sticky situations, folks. They're there for a reason. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the final segment here, fastest 2 hours in talk radio in the new time slot. If you are listening to the live stream at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, it's good to download it to iTunes or something like that. That way you don't have to go to the website. You can just press play, or it's on Winamp and all other sorts of things, including on your smartphones. Just trying to dig into this. How can they possibly think about cancelling Skype for desktop clients? You know, well, there's this big rumor going around about it. It's just, my God, it's like a world-changing event in Skype circles, I guess. Anyway, Suzanne Posel, OccupyCorporatism.com is my guest. Now, we're talking about these kind of weird spiritual experiences, and you just were telling me about one of these experiences you had over the break, and I don't think you want to mention that one on air. But there's a lot of really weird things that happen to people, you know, and apparently there's a drug element to this. Like, they say that alcohol and methamphetamine use are the ones that really ripen you up for, like, demon possession or something like that. You know, have you ever seen somebody like who's, like, so drunk or, like, so hyped up on speed that they appear they're kind of acting like a demon?
No, I have. I didn't hang out with those kind of kids or anything. But I've heard stories about it. The people on coke are absolute. Well, I've also heard stories that coke enhances the personality. So if you're naturally a douchebag, I guess you're even more of a douchebag.
A super douche.
Super douche, like with a cape.
Here he is to save the day. Super douche is on the way. Yeah. I could just think of so many different heads you could put on top of the SD uniform. Now, SD, is that like a type of information card? I think it is.
SD?
Yeah. Super douche.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like if you have the Superman costume, except instead of the big S, there's a big S and a little D.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's real super, but he's a little bit of a douche.
Well, I think it's the same thing with alcohol, too.
Yeah. I have seen many people, countless times, from a sober, genuine, decent person, turn into a drunk, maniacal, obnoxious, fiending, a parasite of a person. You know, the change is extraordinary, and it's come to my attention that there are certain substances which certain people should certainly never imbibe in, because it's just not for them. You know, maybe you have a low tolerance, bro. If you've got a low tolerance, don't freaking do it.
Well, the other thing is the age level. I think that people get caught up in living the party life for too long, and it just looks really bad when you're like in your 40s and you're still sitting at the bar dressing like you're in your teens. You know, it's just not pretty anymore.
Yeah. You know, the best thing about high school girls, you get older, they stay the same age.
Yeah, like as a high schooler and right out of high school, we used to go to clubs and go to like film parties and things like that. But I kind of stayed away from it, just going a few times because I saw the people in the bars and the clubs, and they all kind of looked so sad to me. They were all just trying to go home with somebody. Like, that's their whole life. They work all day, and then they just go to this club and spend all this money and try to have sex. And then they either do or they don't, and then they go to work, and then they go back to the club and try and do it all over again. What kind of life is that?
You mean a life where you work real hard and then party real hard and get laid?
Well, I see many people getting laid.
Well, that's because they don't do it in public, Suzanne.
Well, okay, yes, that's true. I never went to any of those parties, but...
A showing party.
Yeah, no, ugh. But it just seemed like the same people were going to these places and pathetically trying to pick each other up, and maybe once you get through the whole bar, then do you just start on a new bar once you've had sex with everybody who goes to that bar?
Well, basically the idea is to keep going to bars until eventually you wind up shagging somebody who you actually halfway care about, and then you wind up going out with them instead of going out to a bar anymore.
Well, what kind of relationship can you start when you both were drunk and you both thought you looked better than when you do when you wake up?
Well, that's how my relationship with Sarah started. We're getting married in January, thank you very much.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, we got pimped out, like, totally bad. Like, I was interested in her friend kind of thing, and then her friend didn't like me, so she introduced me to Sarah at the same night, and then she got us drunk off some cheap vodka, and, you know, one thing led to another. And at the time, I was cycling everywhere, and Sarah was able to, you know, take my bike apart, put it in the back of her little Holden Barina, and then drive us home to my place, and then reassemble the bike. And this is in the middle of the night, mind you. Well, we've both been drinking a little. Right.
No, that's a keeper.
That's exactly what I said. I said that, yep, she's a keeper.
That has to be an exception to the rule.
Oh, yeah. There's been many other times when I've been drunk around with a woman and it hasn't worked out anywhere near as well.
And a lot of my friends who went partying, they got married and they're either divorced with children or they're still living with their significant other in a trailer. I've got one friend who's living in a trailer with this guy with like four kids, and I don't even understand why.
Does she have a gingham skirt?
I haven't seen her in years. We speak occasionally on Facebook and email each other, but she sends me pictures of her family, and it's just so sad because I knew this girl for 4 years in high school, and she's just a shadow of what she was. And I think a lot of it has to do with the choices that she made, going out to parties and doing things that she probably didn't think about before she did them, and then four kids later, you know, you're in a trailer.
Well, I think there's an old saying, sometimes you end up exactly where you deserve to be.
Oh, that's harsh, man. Four kids in a trailer, I don't care how wide it is, it's still horrible.
Yeah. Well, it's bad to say, oh, it's just your problem and whatever, but, you know, to what extent, and I think this is really important upon reflection, to what extent are our choices actually mandated by the environment that we're in rather than them actually being our own choices? For example, if you don't even have the information on something, then how in the heck would you even make a choice about it, not knowing that there's any other information other than what some person blagged and lied to you about it? You know?
No, I was talking about this with my husband earlier today because we were talking about genetics as opposed to environment. And yes, when you have a genetic foundation upon which to build, but it is your decision after you get that genetic foundation, what you do with it, and that affects your body. So if you have a propensity towards something and you enable that propensity and feed into it, of course you're going to get the outcome that you think. And then you'll say, oh, well, everybody in my family has this. No, it's just everybody in the family decided to nurture that aspect of their genetics.
I do think so. Also, there's the other element, which is if really bad traumas happen to you, that sculpts your character way, way, way hugely, I think.
Yes, and it really irritates me when people, we have these preconceived notions of how we're supposed to react to funerals, to divorces, to losses of job, to the death of a child. And if you don't react that prescribed way, then you're not normal. And it's ridiculous because in moments when we're out of our element, out of our comfort zone, in extreme grief, when our life has been turned upside down, I don't think there's any way to say that any way to react is normal, you know, or abnormal. It's however you're reacting.
Yeah, I think people blame each other too much, and they read too much into things when really it's just, you know, something that happens. And also, there's the other element. What you see isn't necessarily what you see. What you think you're seeing might be just what you remember seeing about something else happening, right? You might find this really strange to think about, but what you see is in a large part simply what you remember seeing. So if you see somebody telling one particular story or whatever, and they're telling the same story that you heard another scumbag say, you start to think maybe this person's a scumbag, when that person has no idea what you're thinking and actually isn't a scumbag at all. Just because you're seeing something that you've seen before doesn't mean it's the exact same thing. And maybe upon a little further investigation, you would see that it is very, very different indeed. And this is where a lot of people in various movements where it's very emotional and the cause is very important start to infight about a lot. Because they all get suspicious of each other and they don't actually want to look at the information because they've all been screwed over by sociopaths in the past, and they assume that you're one if you start exhibiting even the slightest similarity in your behaviours. You know, that's the kind of world that we live in. You do have to be cautious of that, but, you know, sometimes I think if you void all trust in all other people, yeah, it's a hard life indeed. Suzanne Posel, OccupyCorporatism.com. Ladies and gentlemen, go check out her website and thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. We'll see you again.